And this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory right here on PRN.FM. Once again, as I usually do, I want to remind you all that we have a Facebook page, which I hope very much you participate in. The shows as podcasts are available on there, as they are on regular PRN website. But also, I put in various essays, I put in videos, I put in websites and essays from other people that I like, and I'd like to have your participation too. So just Google Occupied Territory and Facebook, Occupied Territory and Facebook, and you will get the Facebook page for this show. And please participate in it. If you have an opinion about anything you heard on the show, if you want to comment, there'll be, and I pay a lot of attention to it, so there'll be responses from me too. Also, I put something on YouTube, which has not gone viral, but it's just a little bit bacterial right now. It's, I don't know, 700 views or something like that. It's called The New Republican Prayer, which references what most of Occupy is concerned about. That is the corruption of money of our government and in our society. It's called The New Republican Prayer on YouTube. So check that out. And today, I've got a few articles I want to read you about the latest developments and how the government is going to turn your life into something that you wouldn't even understand. That we're beginning to understand it, but now we really are going to get it. In fact, one of the headlines, one of the articles here is called, quote, "You're going to feel it. U.S. military unveils new crowd control heat ray." Something from a bad science fiction movie? No. It's your tax dollars at work with our national security government. And also, you may very well be aware of the fact that the Supreme Court just the other day, yesterday or the day before, by a 5-4 vote, what a shock, right? The right-wingers, the political right-wingers on the court, the activist judges, and Kennedy, who is one of their crowd, I guess, voted 5-4 to expand invasive strip searches. And you know what that's going to mean. So this is anybody who gets arrested for anything. You don't have to be suspected. You don't have to have committed a crime before. You don't have to be suspected of some dangerous crime. You don't have to have had a weapon or have made a threatening gesture. Anything at all you get arrested for, a traffic stop, if anything that they can put you in a jail for, even for a few hours or overnight, they can strip search you in the most intimate, aggressive way. And this is what the Supreme Court has decided. And you know, partially this is aimed at all the protests they know they're going to be having from Occupy in this spring and also at the conventions that are coming up at NATO. The government is getting all ready for American citizens to protest its policies and to exercise the right to free speech as if we were all actually terrorists. Homeland Security, the FBI, local police departments, they're militarized. The president maybe every month signs a bill that takes more of your rights away. Why are they so terrified of people 99.9% of the time expressing their rights in a peaceful way, which is why we have an America in the first place? It's how we have an America in the first place. What so terrifies them about this? They won't keep their jobs, I guess. If people actually retain their right to have a say in the government, or I should say reclaim their right to have say in the government, then they won't get away with all their corruption and their unlimited power. So they're all ready for everybody. And if you're a citizen, the lowest thing you can be in this country right now, it used to be a criminal, a lawyer, I don't know what. Now the lowest form of life in this country is a United States citizen. It's a sad, sad thing. Now, I've been doing this show for, I think, probably about more than 6 months, maybe 6.5 months. So it seems to me that it's spring cleaning time for this show. And I always said when I started this show, Occupied Territory, that that I would follow the Occupy movement because, like many people, and I'm sure like a lot of you listening right now, if you've been paying attention to the news the last couple of years, or you're involved in what's going on the last 10 years, last 5 years, last several months even, it gets exponentially worse all the time. You sort of fall into a state of, like a permanent state of rage at what the government is doing and how the government no longer represents the people at all. In fact, they are the enemy of the people in the United States. And I mean all three branches of government and anybody that has anything to do with them. They just steal from us. They invade our privacy. They take our rights away. They laugh at us when we try to express ourselves. They ignore us. They ridicule us, or they lock us up. So, you know, you live in this constant state of anger, sometimes absolute rage. And I know you feel it because I feel it. Just pick up the newspaper. You read the newspaper. You put it down. You got to go and take a Pepsi or something, or get some like green tea and take a nap. If you're not in a state of rage over what our quote unquote government does, then you go into a state of despair, because all your anger, all your demonstrations, and look what happened with Occupy for the last 6 months, all of this adds up to what? They ignored the fact that 60 to 70% of the American public wants Medicare for all. They're hearing the health care bill. Well, they heard the health care bill arguments, and they're going to decide in June. Could easily decide against the health care bill. Now, I don't mind that. I hope they do decide against the health care bill, but not for the same reasons that they're going to decide against it. Like a lot of people, I think this was just a sellout for insurance companies, a way for the president to get himself more votes because he thought people would like it in general, and also a sellout to the pharmaceutical companies. And most people so far, the effect mostly for the health care bill that was passed into the Affordable Care Act, the effect of this law so far has been to raise the premiums and the copays for everybody in the middle class, because the insurance companies have used this as an excuse to raise everybody's copays and insurance payments. And they are still denying service, and they're still losing your papers on purpose. So nothing has stopped the insurance companies. Nothing in this bill, nothing in this act, this law, stops the insurance companies from being pirates and walking all over you and in some cases killing you by denying your right to have life-saving procedures or medicine. So unless we have Medicare for all, we will never solve our national health care problem. And it's getting worse and worse all the time. And we're not going to have Medicare for all, or single payer is another phrase for it, until this act is thrown out. So I'm one of those people who actually would like to see the Supreme Court throw the whole bill out. I don't know if they're legally able to do that, because some of the lawsuits from the state's attorneys general have to do with just the individual mandate part of it. And if they throw that part out, everybody's assuming that the whole bill will collapse. And it might. It probably will. That's a foundation part of the bill. But I want the whole thing to die, just the same way that the right-wingers wanted to die. But the right-wingers wanted to die because they want people to die, because they don't like human beings. I want the bill to be thrown out because I want people to live, and I want everybody to have Medicare for all. And so 60%, sometimes up to 70% in polls they take, wanted this bill. So what? 60 to 70% of the people, when asked about the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq, didn't want it, opposed it. So what? They take poll after poll. Huge majorities of people want this, they want that, and you just get routinely ignored. And what are you supposed to do after a while? Now, as an American, you might want to go look at the Declaration of Independence, which is our founding document. The Constitution? Yes, very nice. The founding document, the DNA, the soul, the passion of America comes from the Declaration of Independence. And in there is where it justifies revolution against a government that no longer pays any attention to people who it rules, and B, actually is aggressive and takes things away from people and harms them, people who it rules. That's what our government's doing now. Now, I can't. It's against the law to be on the radio and advocate a violent overthrow of the American government. It's against several different laws, the most recent one being the Smith Act from 1940, which was passed right around the time when we were looking like we were going to World War II, and there was all kinds of espionage going on here, real espionage by Germans from the, then the FBI, had no trouble proving that. We could see it. So they passed the Smith Act. This is in the middle of liberal Roosevelt's, administration. It is against the law to publicly advocate the violent overthrow of the American government. And yet our founding document, which informs every law, every political and civil activity and thought that Americans have, is the Declaration of Independence, in which it very clearly states that when a government is in charge and they don't pay any attention to the people that they are in charge of, that they are governing, and that they aggressively ignore all their rights, that they take things away from them by force, that they ignore their most basic rights, that they can tax them anytime they want and they have no say over it, that they can quarter troops, you know, they could have troops walking the streets of their cities, and they could arrest people without any habeas corpus. Everything that the government right now is doing to us is what the British government did to Americans in the 1770s. And there was a revolution. America, and there have been other revolutions, the French Revolution and the Haitian Revolution and other revolutions throughout the world, based on the words and the passion and the intellect and the willpower and the activities of the American Revolution. I say, keep looking at the Declaration of Independence. Keep looking at the Declaration of Independence. We are not going to get these people to listen to us until we break laws. Now, I'm not saying be violent, but you can be nonviolent and break their laws. They're not our laws. But when they take our tax money out of our checks and kill people overseas with it and murder Americans without any kind of warrant, and now they can lock people up, anybody, and they can call everybody terrorists, and they can tap anybody's phone and trace anybody's email messages and take anything out of the air that you say. Once that happens, there is no other recourse, and voting is a joke. And I get in trouble with this sometimes when I go on the radio here and I go on Sirius XM and I say, "Don't. If you want to vote, you might as well go out and have a picnic or take a nice walk in the park or go watch a porn movie or have some popcorn for all the good it's going to do you. You want to vote? Be my guest. Vote. How many times have you voted in the last 20, 10, 5, 30, 40 years? And what good has it done you? How has it changed your life? Has it stopped the prices of everything from going up? Has it stopped corporations from poisoning our air and our water? Has it stopped health insurance companies from raising premiums to the point where it practically breaks you? Or landlords from raising rents? Or anybody from raising anything? From oil companies from raising the price of fuel artificially? Has it stopped people in banks from destroying the economy? Has it stopped the military from murdering people with your money? Go out, go and vote. Be my guest. Who are you going to vote for? You're going to vote for the Democrats? What about the Supreme Court, Mike? You know, what about the Supreme Court? That's the one joker in the pack. You know, when you want to make a division between Republicans and Democrats. Yeah, there are differences. Basically, you've got one party, the Republicrats, or the Demoblicans. You can call it whatever you want. And on the right wing of the Republicrats is the Republican Party. And in the middle wing, there is no left wing. You're talking about an animal that's got a right wing and a middle. It's got no left wing, which is why it goes in circles all the time, right? But very heavy, very nasty circles. So, go vote for Obama, and he will appoint maybe liberal court justices, or maybe he won't. He has done more to go after whistleblowers. He has committed more troops and more murders than Bush ever did. I mean, this guy is really something. He has signed more bills that have destroyed our constitutional rights than Bush ever did. He has sent his Justice Department after whistleblowers 10 times worse than George Bush ever did. With Bush, you knew where you stood. He was a son of a bitch, a hard-on, a sadistic bastard from Texas, right? A right-winger, a rich boy, a frat boy. You knew where you stood with him, though, with that slimy little smirk on his face. He didn't care about people at all. Dead or alive, what does he care? Bring it on, whatever he was talking about. With Obama, he smiles. He's intelligent. You know, he gets all righteous and everything. He says hope. He says change. He's full of shit. Can you see it? We can all see it now. So this is what the Occupy movement is about. Okay, so it's been like around 6 or 7 months since the beginning of the Occupy Wall Street group in Zuccotti Park. Occupy movements all over the country. They were 90% of them evicted by the cops, heavily, militarized cops, and with pepper spray. And you all saw the videos. You've seen it, what happened, right? Batons, pepper bullets from guns, stun grenades, heat and light flashes, and they've got more weapons coming, and they've got surveillance equipment. And so they threw everybody out of these occupations. And everybody said, well, that's the end of the Occupy movement. Of course, the major media, the corporate media, which is 95% of the media, they ignored it or they ridiculed it, right? It didn't mean anything. Well, why wouldn't they? Because they're, you know, middle class or upper middle class, the people who write for these organizations, they make millions of dollars themselves. And they are the ones who are being called out by the Occupy movement. And they are controlled by corporations who are necessarily conservative and right-wing. Huge corporations run the news. You're not going to get the news from the news, right? So here's the Occupy movement several months afterwards, all splintered and fragmented. And anybody who says they aren't is living in a daydream. They have been splintered. They have been fragmented. And I said I'd follow it wherever it went. Now, the only thing, after all this like discourse I'm giving you here, that has given me any hope in the midst of this despair and rage about our government, since demonstrations don't make any difference, since voting doesn't make any difference, since you can click all you want, go to Move On, and you can click till you get carpal tunnel syndrome. Does that stop them from doing anything? Now, once in a while, we see, and I think there's hope here. Once in a while, we see, like with the Susan G. Komen Foundation, you see things about Limbaugh. That's the advantage of the technology, modern technology, and the rapidity of it, that people can get in touch instantly. You saw that with the Arab Spring. They used Twitter. They used their cell phones, right? So things happen real fast, and they happen instantaneously, and people can get mobilized that way. But as I've said a lot of times, and I'm not the only one, unless people get out on the streets with their bodies out on the streets and their voices and their rage clearly visible, because it's a country that if they don't see something, in New York City, they have on the subways after 9/11, they have a saying that's up that's common. It's a common saying in New York now, and they have it in Spanish and they have it in English on all the subways, and sometimes they have it on buses, and it says, if you see something, say something. Right. If you see something, say something, which means if you see a suitcase abandoned or something that looks dangerous, tell the cops or tell the authorities right away. Well, America is a country that if it doesn't see something on YouTube or on TV or a Twitter picture or an email graphic or anything or on a website, it doesn't exist. You know, and maybe that's a function of the new technology. But if you don't see anything, it doesn't exist. And people are very, and this is all of us now, and I mean all of us. There's very few saints or absolutely dedicated revolutionaries. All of us are part of the problem. In the old dead 60s, you know, which is also dead and buried, it's like a historical footnote now, there was a common saying was that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Well, you could be both. Is there anybody listening to me now or when you open up the podcast or whatever who isn't using too much energy, who isn't driving a car too much, who isn't got some big TV that they shouldn't be watching so much that they spend too much money on, that isn't participating one way or another in making the society the sort of capitalist, greed, nasty society that it is? I'm doing that. I mean, I try to be conscious, you know, as far as conserving energy. I try to be conscious, but still, all of us. I mean, take Apple. Is there anybody listening to me who isn't using something made by Apple? And you all can see very clearly now, we can all see very clearly now, the way that their employees are treated, almost like slaves over in China. And there's a movement now to stop purchasing Apple products. Who's going to stop doing that? Let's all be very honest with ourselves. We're all part of the problem, and yet... But I give us a break because I have to give myself a break. I give everybody a break. You know, you do your best within the context of living in America, right? You do your best. Now, I am not going to be Pete Seeger and go live up on a mountain in the Catskills and chop my own wood and not use any energy. And I am not Mother Teresa. And I'm not going to be somebody like that. I've just too much. I don't know. Maybe I don't have the willpower. Maybe I don't have the dedication. Whatever it is, there's very few people like that. I mean, who is Gandhi? Who is Martin Luther King? Even Martin Luther King, he liked to have a good time. You know, I mean, people are people. Now, it takes almost a saint or somebody willing to give their life up, and often that has happened, or spend 20 years in jail, and often that has happened in this country. Eugene Debs, look him up, is one of the prime examples. You have to pay for these things. You have to pay for these things. Here's a quote from Frederick Douglass. This is from around the time of the Civil War. And this is an extraordinary quote, which appears in a book by Chris Hedges, which is not out yet. It's coming out in like in 3-4 weeks. The whole history, this is Frederick Douglass, the whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggle, said Frederick Douglass. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Let me say that again, brothers and sisters. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. The struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows, or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the very endurance of those whom they oppress. Now, you know, not everybody can write like that, which is why I read that to you. I mean, they will get away with anything. There are always those people out there who want more. They're not satisfied with what they have. They want more until there's no sense to it. They want more even when they have enough for 1,000 people. And they want what you have, inevitably. Because when they want more, they wind up bumping up against what little you have, and they take it from you because they need more. They want more power. They want more money. They want more land. And they don't care what happens to anybody else. Those people have always been with us. They were in the original caves that human beings grew up in, you know, 50,000 years ago or evolved in 100,000 years ago. There was always some asshole in the cave that wanted your spot in the cave. And he would go over and hit you over the head with, and he'd take it from you, right? Didn't care. And those people are always with us. Telescope forward to Donald Trump, or the head of a hedge fund, or the head of the Democratic Party, and that's what you got. Or the Republican Party. There's no difference between the two of them. Etch-a-sketch, the whole goddamn thing. Right? So there they are. Now, that's why the Occupy movement has given me hope and continues to give me hope. However, as I said in the beginning of the show, I think it's time for a little spring cleaning of this show, Occupy Territory. I have had contact with dozens and dozens and dozens by email, by phone, and people coming on the air here, of people who were at occupations, who got thrown out of occupations. I have been in touch with people at Occupy Wall Street, for instance. Now, every 2 months when I get in touch with Occupy Wall Street, sometimes every 4 weeks when I get in touch with one occupation or another, the person I was in touch with who is in charge of media relations isn't there anymore. When I get in touch with Occupy Wall Street or other places, it takes them many days to get back to me. And sometimes when they finally do get back to me, when I want to invite them on the show or they want to discuss an issue so that they can tell everybody what they're doing, they get back to me and they say, yes, thank you very much for inviting us. We will put it in front of the General Assembly. Oh, really? Is that the struggle? I know about left-wing bureaucracies. I've died many deaths in many different left-wing bureaucracies in my life. The last one was BAI. There is nothing that you took this phrase, circular firing squad. It was invented by left-wing people. Only they know how to immolate themselves, self-immolate themselves in guilt and in carping, questioning, and arguing. That is one reason, unfortunately, why often conservatives and Republicans and fascists throughout history are much more successful than left-wingers. In the 20s and 30s, in Italy and in Germany, the fascists, and in France too, the fascists ultimately and easily took over from the Social Democrats. Why? Because the fascists all raised their hands together because they wore the same uniforms, they didn't question anything, and they hit people over the head when they were told to do it. And they didn't worry about arguing or voting or fairness or anything, right? Ronald Reagan came into office, threw the fairness doctrine right out the window. No more fairness doctrine. When I was on the radio back in the 80s, if I invited a candidate for the city council in New York City, for instance, on the air to talk about something, I was required by federal law and by common decency, right, to invite his opponent on, even if I didn't care about his opponent. You had to give everybody equal time. No more equal time. This is why the fascists took over from the Social Democrats. The Social Democrats who wanted to give things to people, who wanted to try to erase poverty, who wanted to level the playing field for people, who wanted to give everybody a fair vote. And they said, well, if we're going to do that, even if we're dealing with Nazis who say they want to kill us and actually have beat a lot of us up and killed us, we still have to give them the right to do what they want. Oh, really? Oh, really? You know, now, the people say, well, what the communists, you know, what the communist dictatorship in the Soviet Union, they were never communists. There have been very few actual communes or communist movements in the history of the world. the last one I can think of is some in the 60s, which fell apart because of drugs and stupidity. And the other ones that were really successful and still are in some cases, the kibbutzim movement, the kibbutz in Israel. True communist organizations. Nobody in charge. Revolving power structure. But, you know, a temporary person in charge. They did have mayors of these places or leaders because it was a simple bureaucracy. Somebody had to relate to the outside world. Somebody had to pull together all the strands of the different feedback and the arguments that people had. And they had to tell people this is what everybody's voted to do. Somebody had to run the meeting. Right? People couldn't just all speak up at the same time. Somebody's got to be in charge, even temporarily, to get anything going. When you turn your car on, you know, when you press a button or turn a key and the car goes on, the motor will start, turning the axle, will start turning the wheels. I'm not good at mechanical things. And the car will go. But somebody's got to be in charge. You can't get in a car and sit down behind the wheel of a car and say, okay, wheels, okay, axle, okay, motor, okay, carburetor, let's all do our thing. I'm just going to sit here and then we'll get rolling, right? That's not the way it works. Somebody has got to be in charge. You can't sit in a car and say, without pressing on the gas or turning the wheel or pressing on the brake, if you want to get somewhere or not bang into somebody, you're in charge. Temporarily, at least, as they were in the kibbutz, people were in charge of things. So the Occupy movement that I've dealt with over the last 6 months, because they were thrown out by the police and they were ignored by the media and ridiculed and people didn't support them, fragmented. Some of them just dissolved. And there's something else about the Occupy movement. And, you know, people said, don't compare it to the 60s. It's not the same thing. It's impossible not to compare protest movements. Like if you look at the 30s protest movements, the bonus marchers, the veteran marchers who came to Washington, the Communist Party that marched in the streets of New York and other major cities, the great union movements. You have to know history if you want to know anything about America. So, and in the 60s, the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement. And in the 70s, then it was gay rights and women's rights. Now, it was simpler to protest those things because for two reasons. One is because it was a single issue thing. It was easier to protest the war in Vietnam because that was it, the war in Vietnam. It was easy to protest civil rights violations and to get more civil rights and to march for civil rights because that's what it was about, that one thing. And for women's rights, it was about women's rights. It was a simple, single issue thing, and you protested against it. Also, the other thing was that it was women who wanted women's rights and turned out on the streets. It was gay people that flooded the streets and turned out on the streets and flooded legislative chambers because it was their skin in the game. You know that phrase? It was their rights. Anti-war movement, a lot of us got out there, to be honest, because we could be drafted. Because we could be killed or go over and have to kill other people in a country we didn't even know about or care about. And civil rights, if you're black, you damn well had to be in the civil rights movement, you know, because it was your life. It was your life and your very right to live and your right to vote and your right to, you know, sit at a lunch counter or ride in a bus. But that's different than it is now. That's what makes the Occupy movement such a difficult thing. They are protesting something which goes even deeper and which is even wider than any single issue from the 60s. If you look at the Occupy, if you look at the civil rights protests and demonstrations and how many people, was it 500,000 people to hear Martin Luther King in Washington? Hundreds of thousands of people turned out all over the place. Whole towns, whole cities got shut down by civil rights protests, right? And it was nonviolent almost all the time. Most of the anti-war protests, and this is a war we're protesting, where people could get drafted and killed and had to murder other people that they didn't have any interest in or care about or didn't even know about or were even sympathetic toward. Most of us, when we looked at, we were brought up as Americans, right? When I was growing up in the 50s, I don't know how it is now, if they teach the same thing, is that don't be a bully. You know, there's a lot about bullying now. But the whole point was when you were a kid, they would tell you in the 50s, listen, one of the worst things you could do is pick on somebody smaller than you. Big phrase was, why don't you pick on somebody your own size? So we all looked at this Vietnamese war, and they all kept trying to explain it. It's about the commies, and they're going to take over the world. All we see is one small country with a bunch of small people compared to Americans, right, who have been fighting the Chinese for 1,000 years, the Japanese and the French for the last couple of 100 years, and now we're there? The sympathies of any decent, normal person in this country were for the Vietnamese, and they're going to draft us to go kill them? No way, right? So a lot of people, millions of people turned out on the streets over and over and over again, on college campuses, on the streets, everywhere, and, you know, to protest this war, to protest this, to protest that. So these were single issues. But what has the Occupy movement decided to take on here? Not just one single issue, but every issue. And that's part of the problem, is that it gives people in the major media and people who are well-meaning citizens who would like to support them, who do oppose the kind of sickness and moral decay and greed that has destroyed America and the fact that money runs everything. Most people don't like that. Most people are the victims of it, and they don't like the feeling of it. They don't like to be involved in it, and they would support this. But they look at the Occupy movement, and they're sitting in houses that have been foreclosed. They're protesting money that's being spent on the war. They're protesting the health care. Obviously, what they're protesting is the corrupting effect of money on America. They're protesting the fact that money has bought all the politicians. They're protesting the fact of income inequality, where people, 1% of the population, has hundreds of billions of dollars, and there's almost no middle class left, and the rest of the population has nothing. That people are starving, being thrown out of their houses, thrown out of their jobs. Typical example, in New York City, just pick one charity in New York, and you could pick one in every city. People who run these huge charities get paid $400,000 a year, $1 million a year, and what do? They lay off people who there are charities where people get paid $35,000 a year to help children who are disabled, to help people who are blind and can't find their way across the street, to provide a little sunshine in the lives of people who are shut-ins or isolated, who bring food to people who literally would starve to death otherwise. These people get laid off in the thousands at these charities, and all the time, the CEOs and the vice presidents of these organizations make $800,000 a year, $1 million a year. This is the kind of country we live in, right? Now, it sickens most decent, normal American people, and they look at Occupy and they say, yeah, right. They're right about that. Greed is killing us. The politicians have been bought and sold. But they look at the Occupy people and they don't see two things that people saw in the 60s. I'm thinking out loud here because I want people to call in eventually if anybody's listening. And I know that the live audiences for a lot of these internet shows aren't that big. You know, when I was on BAI, I had like, you know, 17 or 18,000 live listeners all the time. And on Sirius XM, I have whatever, X thousands of listeners live. But most people here listen on podcast to this show. So here's the point. So what people who are well-meaning and would support Occupy, they look at Occupy and they see the if you see the reports in the papers or on TV, you've got to know better that they're distorting it or ridiculing it or ignoring it. The New York Times, for instance, ignores it or ridicules it. But what's really going on is that these people are protesting the very thing that most people in America don't like. They don't like our money being spent on wars. They want Medicare for all. But the bottom line, what's underneath all of this, what causes all this trouble is the intrusion of money, is the corrupting effect of money on politicians and on agencies and on people who run corporations. And it's the corrosive, corrupting effect of money. And everybody sees this and everybody knows it because they're being laid off and thrown out of their houses. They see it and they want to support the Occupy movement, but they see them attacking everything at once. And also they see them not with one single issue. And also, they see a lot of people. Now, I've had this experience, too, with Occupy people. Just most recently, there were some people who occupied radio station BAI in New York City. BAI has gotten old and gouty. It's an old, gouty, left-wing organization. And I was in it for, like, you know, 25, 30 years. I was the assistant manager. I was on the air there for 25 years. It saved my life when I was in my 20s. And a lot of people will say the same thing in New York City. BAI, it's a Pacifica radio station, very left-wing, very radical. You know, it was an essential part and is an essential part, even still to this day, of my DNA, of my bones. One of the few places that gave Occupy from the last fall any regular show or anything. So now a splinter group of Occupy, without the permission of the Occupy movement, has sat in at BAI. That's like if you were in the anti-war movement, instead of going to the Pentagon or the draft board or someplace like that and getting arrested or getting beat up by the cops or having bricks thrown at you by idiot construction workers like what happened to us, if you were protesting the war in the 60s, you would go protest a Quaker meeting house. That's what these people are doing over at BAI. It's easy. You want to take candy from a baby? Anybody can do that. BAI's not going to call the cops. Very cheap kind of stuff. So people look at the Occupy movement. They see people, and they talk to them, and they have interviews with people. The Occupy movement. Here's Jenny Smith from the Occupy movement. Where are you from, Jenny? Well, I was studying, at the University of Copenhagen, and I thought, well, I'd come back and fight injustice. And then I'm going back next semester. Or here's somebody else from the Occupy movement. What did you used to do? Well, I've been out of work for 26 years, and I thought I would go to the Occupy movement, and I would really try to change things, and then I could get a job. And this is what they see. But, of course, the media cherry picks these people, right? There's a lot of earnest, hardworking people who have been beaten up and pepper sprayed. You saw it happen to the students there. And there's a lot of people who are doing this. And yet, what has happened? I don't know. What will the Occupy movement do? And they have a harder job, really, than all of us had in the 60s. They don't have a single issue, and they don't have their own lives on the line here. So they have to have that motivation. But the hardest part about the Occupy movement and the job that they have and what they're tackling is they are going after the actual bone marrow of America. We were going after, a heavy fist in America. We were going after a boot in America. We were going after bared teeth in America in the 60s. They're going after the bone marrow, the very blood corpuscles of America. That's money. That's greed. Now, the flag of the United States, the Stars and Stripes, everybody knows if you look at it real hard and you want to see what it really is, it's like one of those, when they used to have secret ink writing when I was a kid, like if you held it up to, you'd written with secret ink, I don't know what it was made out of, and you hold it up to a flame and then the ink would appear. If you held the American flag up to, to a little flame, the secret flag would appear. It's a $100 bill. Forget the Stars and Stripes. The flag of the United States is a $100 bill. The Occupy movement is attacking the bottom line of America, what propels America like fuel propels an engine in a jet or a car. Money, greed. It's what America is about. It's what it was always about. This stuff about free speech and freedom of religion. Yes, important things, founding things. People's lives on the line. People read about the Revolutionary War sometime. What a vicious, nasty, endless war that we almost lost several times, what we were fighting for. We weren't fighting for money, right? Well, who was in charge of the Revolutionary War? Who were the founders? Rich guys, rich people. Now, idealistic, noble rich people, people who inspired a revolution, people who led a revolution, they owned slaves, most of these people. They were all rich. It's always been like that. Now, they couldn't have won it without regular people. But when you attack money in America, when you go up against the money, that's when they come after you. It's no mistake that all this national security apparatus and all these ripping up of constitutional protections and violation of privacy laws and strip searches and Department of Homeland Security funding local police departments, it's no mistake that they're getting so heavy with everybody on this. Why? Because it's not just one war it's being protested, or civil rights for one ethnic group or one minority, or, rights for one gender or rights for one sexual, orientation. No, the Occupy movement is attacking America in its vitals. It's attacking the money. And that you can't do. If there's a first commandment of the Ten Commandments of America is thou shalt not question the money. And that's what the Occupy movement is doing. And that's why they're coming after it so hard. That's why they're coming after it so hard. So I'm going to keep following the Occupy movement. And what I intend to do is probably instead of once in a while, I'll interview somebody since there aren't occupations too much. And I'll interview somebody who I can identify as a legitimate representative of someplace like Occupy Washington or Occupy someplace. And maybe it will change in some way or evolve in some way. They don't want to get involved in the political process. I can understand that. It's intelligent, and it's the only way to go for Occupy to stay out of the political process. They know that they can't be sucked into that. And part of the problem is that the major unions, who people like me and other people say they should be associating with because these are the working people. You saw what happened in Madison, Wisconsin. The first thing after the Arab Spring, the first thing we had like the Arab Spring happened in Madison, Wisconsin, and it was the January before this January. It was more than a year ago, where regular workers and union people and other people showed up at the Capitol and occupied it for something like 3 weeks, and nobody got hurt there because these were regular middle class, lower middle class working people, nurses, you know, cops, firemen, other people, because the Koch brothers' puppet governor, Scott Walker, was trying to eliminate every union and every right for everybody. So they showed up. And people say, well, Occupy should associate with the unions. There's some danger in that, and Occupy points that out. There's danger in that because most of the unions at the very top levels of them are in bed with the Democratic Party. They're no different than the Democratic Party. You know, the money trades hands. The money goes back and forth between them, the powers, the meetings. So Occupy needs to stay to be effective, just like we were in the 60s. You don't pay attention to the structure of the party. You don't pay attention to the regular structures. You walk on the grass. Lenin once said that the revolution would never happen in Germany because the Germans, if they were to storm a train station, would all line up to buy a ticket first. That's why it had to happen in Russia, where people were passionate and didn't want to take that kind of bullying anymore. They were too middle class and they were too authoritarian in Germany. And that's what has to happen here. We can't pay attention to their rules. It's got to stay nonviolent. If we get violent with them, we're just going to get violence back, and they're much better at it than we are. Okay? Much better at it than we are. So it's got to stay nonviolent, but at the same time, we have to break their laws. And I say their laws. Why do I say their laws and not our laws? Because you know, and I know, they're not our laws anymore. These are not our representatives. This is not our government. It's their government, and we know who we mean when we say they. And I'm not being paranoid or conspiratorial here. It's rich people. Rich people who are power hungry, and they're all the same, and they run everything and they own everything. We have to break their laws. We have to sit inside their banks. We have to slow things down. We have to do a general strike. We have to do something far more vast and more profound and more aggressive than we've done before, just like Frederick Douglass said, or we'll get nowhere. And I am going to continue this show because I believe there's still some hope here, and I'm going to have people on as regular guests who have written books, who are journalists, people who are economists, people who are activists who write things, like Chris Hedges, and Bruce Levine, who was a psychologist who was on last week, people who write books about how to do this and practical ways to do it, historians who have written books about other things, people who are in charge of forgiving student loan or, you know, eliminating all student loan debt. That kind of thing. I will have people on who are experts and people who are active in this and people who are articulate. And I will occasionally have people on from Occupy. But my experience with the Occupy people is that they don't have the seriousness and the focus they need to achieve what we need to achieve here. However, whatever they do is better than nothing. And like Frederick Douglass says, they have put their bodies on the streets. They have gotten beaten up and locked up. And they have gotten pepper sprayed. And they will continue to do it. But they have to do it. If they don't do it, then it's not going to happen. And they have to be careful about aligning with unions. But if they don't align with unions, what good is it going to do if they don't align with working people? If they don't extend themselves somehow to the middle class, if they don't respond to what's left of the middle class, they will just constantly be out there by themselves in small groups getting their asses kicked and locked up. And that's what Occupy has turned into, what it may continue to be. Now, if that speech of mine has not put everybody to sleep or driven everybody away, if anybody wants to call, and I can understand, like I said before, there aren't always that many live listeners. The number here is 888-874-4888. We have, I don't know, six. How many minutes do we have left? Like 6 minutes, something like that? Yeah, okay. 888-874-4888. Call me up if you have an opinion to express on this. Also, please go to the Facebook page because this argument will continue on the Facebook page. Any response you have that you don't get in, if you listen on podcast, put it on the Facebook page and we'll engage in a dialogue on the Facebook page. We'll dialogue each other, okay? We'll do it on the Facebook page. And the way to do that is go to just Google Facebook and Occupied Territory. Facebook and Occupied Territory. Do we have any calls? Okay, we don't. So let me read you what's in charge. What's in charge for it? We know who's in charge. But let me read you what's in store. What's in store for everybody here? Because they're not fooling around. Why? Because people have been talking about the money. Now, Here's an article that appeared in Alternet, and it says, quote, "You're going to feel it. U.S. military unveils new crowd control heat ray." A Marine colonel who was interviewed said, "I think our forces will figure out the many different applications that it would have." That's pretty clear what he means. Oh, this is from Common Dreams, excuse me. "The U.S. military has unveiled its newest approach to crowd control, the active denial system." I love the words that these people come up with. "The active denial system, a heat ray that sends out a high-frequency electromagnetic beam. People hit with the ray feel an intense, unbearable heat. This is an actual military weapon that has been perfected. The military touts the ray's far-ranging capabilities and is looking at the, quote, many different applications for its possible use." Now, guess what you guess what application it's going to be used for in this country? Within a month, maybe, you're going to see the militarized police departments who get tens of millions of dollars from the Defense Department and from the FBI and from Homeland Security especially. They're going to be using this heat ray on people. They won't be bad signs of them. You won't see any more big, bad, awful cops pepper spraying students. Maybe they learned a little bit from this. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they don't care. And this is what the colonel says. "You're not going to see it. You're not going to hear it. You're not going to smell it. But you're going to feel it." You think they won't use that on people here? What would stop them? We're all watching our flat-screen TVs. We're all tweeting. We're all having a good time. We're all sympathizing with these people, but they're going to be out there. Now, I know not everybody. I understand not everybody can go out on the street and be that. You know, you have a job. You have a family. Maybe you're older. Maybe you're disabled. You can't get out there, and you can't put your body on the line. But sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to. Now, some older people will do that, but most times this falls, sadly, inevitably, throughout history and every place on earth, it falls generally on younger people. And sometimes when you get an entire society that is so poverty-stricken and so abused and so oppressed, like in India in the 20s and 30s and 40s, everybody turned out. They didn't have any jobs or any money or any food anyhow. They had nothing to lose. In this country, a lot of people have a lot to lose, which makes it even harder to get their asses out on the street. I understand that. Just like I said, in the 60s, we went out on the street because we had our lives to lose. You know, we had our lives to lose. So there's a heat ray that they got waiting for you. So you want to go out there now, they got even worse weapons. And yet, if we don't face them down, we will have had it. Is this a call that we have or a comment? Call? All right. So Spiro from Newark, you're on.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you? I could give you a couple of minutes.
Okay, I'll try and make it fast. To the best of my understanding, there's been two or three Latin American countries that have actually narrowed the gap between the top 1% and the bottom 99%. And again, as far as I'm aware, they all involve some kind of electoral effort married to social movements. And I'm wondering why, through all the analysis I've ever read of Occupy Wall Street, no one actually looked at what actually has worked in recent past in Latin America. And I'd like to know if you'd be willing to at least try and dig into that and get people to actually know how that went down in Latin America to actually advise us here in North America about how to go about things.
I will do that. Obviously, there's some missing link between before people got involved in the electoral system and protests, which happened down in various countries down there, and then how it evolved and how it merged into the actual electoral system, which got reformed. How that happened, there's some little mystery or magic that's clearly revealed by people who know it, as you suggest, that we should look into that, because they did finally wind up reforming the political system somewhat and using the vote. Inevitably, that's what people hope, especially in this country, people do. But there's something missing between what's going on now, and you see what happens when we vote now, right? Nothing. So I don't know what's missing.
Yeah. I think, though, it's very simple-minded to say, well, yeah, I voted for the lesser of two evils. If you're conservative, that means you voted for Republican. And if you're liberal, that means you voted for Democrat. And say, oh, and look, it didn't work for the last 23 years. Well, of course it didn't work. So,
right.
So
what's missing?
That's why you got to look at building up third parties, about running insurgent campaigns within the legacy parties, and tricks that I don't even know of, which I'm sure were used by the Latin American countries that actually managed to narrow the gap between the top 1% and the bottom 100%.
It's a very good comment, and I will look into it because it's an essential comment. I mean, you can't have a permanent revolution. You do have to finally wind up with some kind of democratic electoral system. So I will look into it.
Okay, thanks. And I could tell you from my readings in the more progressive blogosphere.
Wait, we only got a couple of seconds left. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. I'll just say I haven't. No one's covering this as far as I know. That's it.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely will look into it. And check out the Facebook page and put this comment on the Facebook page, all right?
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. Okay. This is Mike Fader. I guess we didn't have too many calls. Maybe we have a couple more coming in, but we don't have the time now. So we got to end now. So the question is, wither the Occupy movement, to use an old-fashioned word. What is going to happen with them now? Who are they? What are they going to do? And what's our responsibility? Like Frederick Douglass said, it may be a physical responsibility or a moral responsibility. And as this gentleman said who just called up, there's something between the Occupy movement and mass civil disobedience, which has to happen on a constant basis till they concede some of our demands, that is to get our democracy back, and the electoral system. There's something in between there that has to happen. Usually it means people have to put their bodies on the line and get hurt and get locked up. It's always meant that. It will mean that again, or nothing will happen. We'll see you next week.